The following program is for entertainment and basic informational purposes only. The views expressed do not necessarily reflect the views of Cumulus Media, WPRV Radio, its management, or staff. This is Rhode Island's longest-running financial talk show, Money Talk with Don Soa. With market insights and so much more, talk to Don now at 437-5000 or 1-888-345-0790. This is Money Talk with Don Soa.
And, yep, this is in fact Don Soa tonight. Steve Beauvais handles the microphone here on a Friday, but he is busy today. We had a little bit of scheduling conflict for him, so he asked me if I could step in and represent him this evening with you during your drive time home. And I'm delighted to do so, and I'm delighted to be, if not already, one of the very first people to welcome you to the period known as autumn. We are now officially in autumn. Summer is over, and a little bit of rain outside as I look out the window onto the Wampanoag Trail, sort of, I guess, fitting. It's a little bit cooler today than some of the hot weather we've been accustomed to. But, stock market ended a little bit, slightly lower, I guess maybe unchanged today amid some rising geopolitical tensions with North Korea. North Korean's Minister of Foreign Affairs, Ri Yong-ho, had said yesterday that the country may consider testing a hydrogen bomb in the Pacific Ocean. And, of course, if successfully conducted, that test would be North Korea's first nuclear test, not only beyond its borders, but first test that would be actually in the atmosphere, above ground, in other words. There have been nuclear tests done in the past. China's done them. We've done them, U.S. And of course, North Korea has done them underground. I'm not saying there's no risks attached to that, certainly, depending upon where you do them. There's some potential risks to the mantle and to potential for even triggering earthquakes. But ultimately, the level of radiation released can be controlled at some level. I don't think any kind of testing of nuclear or thermonuclear weapons is actually going to be considered good under any circumstances. But this is the most recent threat, of course, by the regime of Kim Jong-un. Now, the Dow was down about 9 points. I guess the culprit on the NASDAQ and S&P that put some pressure to it was Apple, posting its worst week we've seen in Apple in more than a year. Of course, coinciding with the launch of some new generations of their products, including their watch and the Apple 8. As with all things, if there's ever a problem with Apple, there's a history of this that occurs if you look at the cycles, and they come up with a patch or some sort of a software fix for it very, very quickly. And then, of course, the new products become into high demand and the stock price recovers. Those of you who may own it already, if you were looking for an opportunity to add to your position, this may well be that opportunity to do so. If not, you might have been looking for an opportunity to get it in the first place. I'm a great believer that, and I've said it many times on this show, and I've also offered as a bit of a disclosure that I am, in my own personal account, an owner of Apple shares. I owned them, purchased them over time in various increments to get to where I am now. And I don't believe or consider Apple or other stocks of that genre to be trader stocks, the stock, kind of stock you jump in and jump out of looking for those types of prices or opportunities. I'm an investor in that stock, and it's one that I intend to hold for quite some time. And there's a number of other individuals I know who are also analysts, even guys like Jim Cramer on CNBC, and he says the same thing. He says Apple is not a stock you trade, but he does own it in his charitable trust, and he says he's owned it for a while, and it will continue to own it for a while because of what he views as its future prospects. Apple is like a number of other companies, even some of the FANG stocks that are part of that mix, Facebook, Apple, Amazon.com, Google, and the like. They are also very important companies with important technologies and important products for the consumer market, not only domestically but globally. So that's a reason why you don't think of them from a trader's perspective. But the S&P 500 and the NASDAQ indexes closed just above the flat line today, so they were both in the black. An odd day. I was watching it since early morning, even before the markets opened. you're looking at futures contracts and then early morning trading. And the market was, and actually those primary indices were down a good part of the day. And then later on in the day, watched the S&P and the NASDAQ move into the black. But of course, that the Dow Jones, which represents 30 companies, did stay just marginally right at the flat line and into the slightly into the red. So wasn't able to get above that level, but not too significant. That's why some analysts just say the market was flat for the day. No specific trend to look at. The rising geopolitical tensions, the uncertainty of what all of this nonsense means. This is one of those cases where we're afraid of what we don't know. And that did leave investors a little bit uneasy heading into the weekend, especially according to Art Hogan. He's with Wunderlich Securities, a chief market strategist. He suggested that the path of least resistance, you know, is probably to lighten up a little bit today because of the geopolitical uncertainties that people are experiencing from both sides of the rhetoric. You know, both sides is rising, both the president of the U.S. and, of course, Kim Jong-un's side. As hard as that is to put a number on, certainly it doesn't give investors much of a sense of security that any of their investments or the timing of their investments, you know, one guy said to me, you know, I could possibly think of maybe a better time. It's not that it's a bad time or a good time. It's just that maybe there's a better time. So maybe I'll hold off and wait and watch and keep some powder dry. He thinks that's probably a little bit of the focus that you were looking at in today's trading activity. Not a lot of momentum to the upside. Rhetoric between the United States and North Korea escalated this week as the North Korean leader, Kim Jong-un, criticized U.S. President Donald Trump, calling the president's United Nations speech earlier this week unprecedented, rude nonsense. Interestingly enough, I heard some Americans saying the same thing, so the North Korean leader was not necessarily alone on this, but it's just one more parry. It's sort of like two guys with swords out there fencing. They're parrying at each other. Trump responded, of course, in kind on Twitter. He had to. That's who he is. He called Kim a madman who doesn't mind starving or killing his people. I don't disagree with that either. I mean, it's an odd dynamic, these two people, and everybody thinks they're both crazy. We all have the right to have an opinion, but the only difference here is if leaders do in fact translate their rhetoric into actions, that's when things get a little bit iffy. Now, despite the political sparring that we see going on, the global market reaction was actually kind of subdued. The European 600 stocks index rose about 0.03%. That's after falling earlier, while Asian markets closed mostly in the red. Hong Kong's Hang Seng fell about 0.8%. The South Korean KOSPI, K-O-S-P-I, that's their index, it was down about 0.7%. Now, I mentioned Apple a little bit earlier. Apple shares continued to be a drag on the market, fell about 1.5%. The stock has dropped 5.5% since Monday. Many people believe the stock's slip is spurred by some of the kind of questionable reviews of the company's new iPhone 8 and the Apple Watch product. Despite the stock's recent performance, it remains up about 32% for this year to date, since the month of January, so pretty darn good. Another reason to own it and keep it and have some faith. Question also are, you know, the Apple Watch having some connectivity problems with the internet, with the World Wide Web. These are the sort of things that the company has a tendency to respond quickly to. I'm sure that they will have a fix in place very, very quickly for those who are looking for whatever advantages the new Apple Watch represents as opposed to having to confront or deal with any of the headaches they represent. I'm a great believer with these products, and I have some of my own adult children use the Apple products, whether it's the iPhone or not the watch per se, but you know the tablets and the like. And they're never inclined to go out and buy the brand new one. They're not going to wait in line and get it because they're saying, you know, there's always some little glitch or some little problem that's going to come out when when it is first announced, when it is first, you know, comes out. And right now, once it gets into a wider distribution, a lot of people are using them, then we start to discover what the problems are because everybody's using them. And Apple aficionados are almost a religion. It's a sort of a cult of the powerful with Apple, and they discover all the things that you could do with it and the things you can't do. And they're very, very quick to announce what they are, to let people know just how bright they are. So anyway, Apple is put in a position where they get a lot of opinion and information very, very quickly. The markets, yes, will initially sometimes respond to that in an adverse manner, I guess. But because of the quick public response and consumer response to the products and to the to the programs they use, Apple is put in a position where they can adjust and adapt and, of course, correct any problems very, very quickly also. And that's the long-term history of the product line. And so I'm not deeply concerned right now whether the Apple Watch is having a few problems. I'm sure they'll fix that quickly. Now, on the flip side, shares of Boeing added about 0.63% as the dispute, the company and its Canadian rival, Bombardier, tends to heat up a little bit. The two are battling over a potential defense sale worth about $5 billion. Now, Aerospace, you can buy stock in Aerospace. You can't buy stock in Aerosmith. Maybe we should be able to. That would probably be a profitable endeavor. Aerosmith and defensive stocks have surged this week amid rising global tensions, and shares of Orbital ATK and Aerojet Rocketdyne traded 0.14% and 4.6% higher, respectively. Both companies are up about 20% since Monday alone. Folks, you are listening to the Money Talk program. I'm Don Sowa here on AM 790, your home of talk and business. This is Money Talk. I'm sitting in tonight for Mr. Steve Beauvais, who will be back with us next week. So I'll take a quick break and we'll be right back.
This is Money Talk with Don Sowa, exclusively on AM 790 Talk and Business.
And we're back with tonight's Money Talk program. I'm Don Sowa, filling in this evening for Steve Beauvais. This is AM 790, your home of talk and business. You know, during the break, I was talking to our producer here. And he actually, during the daytime, also, just to show you what a hardworking guy he is, he works in one of the big box retailers, shall we say, here in southern New England. And now you folks, at your store, the stores you have, and these are, by the way, these are big retailers, are major sellers of Apple-based products, whether mm-hmm. it's the laptop, the tablets, and certainly the iPhones themselves. Yeah. Now, this was the big launch week for the iPhone 8 series this week. How many did you guys sell at your store?
Well, we didn't sell any because we never got them.
You never. Now, in fairness, was the management there telling you guys that it was expected this week, or did you say we're not expecting to get any?
Well, as far as we knew, we were getting them, so that's what we were telling our customers when they were coming through. Naturally, the day of is when they sent us a little thing, at least for the watches, saying, this watch will be coming in within the week. It might not be their day of. This one of the watches, the Nike brand one, that one we're not even getting till October.
Oh, so some of the more generic marketing information that's let out there, which might expect people who would be interested in going in to buy them, it says, you know, that it's generic enough that it doesn't give specifics, and sometimes the customers who do come in end up being disappointed.
Mm-hmm.
Now, you didn't get them today. Are they telling you what, next week maybe?
Yeah, most the notice we got was saying, yeah, we should get them within the week, or at least the generic ones, not the fancy one that's like can basically replace your iPhone. But
now this isn't the first time this has happened. I mean, you went through it in different series with the Apple devices in the past.
Yeah, I know with the last phone that came out, we had them, but it was only we had enough to fill reservations because so many people pre-ordered the last phone at our particular store. The watches, I think we did get them, but it was like one or two.
But then is it like several months then before it seems to be a regular inventory item?
Usually after the first couple of weeks when they're not flying off the shelf as soon as I get them in the morning, yeah, then they become pretty regular to the point that I have 20 of them sitting in the back room for a month.
You know, I used to say these products and services have taken on almost a cult-like status, but I think it's a little bit more of just being able to say that you were among the first to get one as opposed to whether you ended up getting one at all.
Yeah, I think it's what it ends up being sometimes, because after a while, people just say, oh, I'm not going to buy the new Apple product because I know they're going to have another one next September, because it's almost become an annual thing. Every September is the new phone, watch, laptop, whatever.
Oh, well. Well, anyway, so the news of the day for this week. It wasn't just the geopolitical tension, although it seemed to eclipse the attention of a great many investors, but it was also one of those weeks where Janet Yellen, the Fed chairman, and the Federal Reserve's Open Market Committee were meeting, and they make an announcement on Wednesday as to whether they're going to raise the Fed fund rate or interest rates, or if there's going to be any major changes in the Fed's monetary policy. And we've been kind of waiting, and we've talked about it here on the Money Talk program, we've been waiting for any fundamental changes from the Fed. And basically, they said, well, number one, they're not going to change. They were going to change the rates this, you know, in this round. There is a suggestion that we may get a rate hike in the month of December. They said that right now the likelihood that there will be a quarter point increase to the Fed fund rate in December has now reached 60% likelihood. The rule of thumb, strange enough, if you look at the history of these meetings, has been that once the likelihood, the chance of an increase gets to 70%, as I said, it's 60 now. When it gets to 70, they have always, always increased at least a quarter of a point at the time that they're indicating the possibility. So right now there's a 60% chance. I believe it'll probably, you'll probably see a 70%, an increase to 70% for likelihood at some point in the next several weeks. And then once that happens, that tells me, yes, we'll probably see a December increase. The Fed has got to be careful. They don't want to create, in an economy that is grinding higher, that is growing, yes, there is GDP growth, but it's not extremely exuberant, shall we say. It's not a robust economy by a long shot. But the Fed is trying to determine at what point can the Fed stand on its own. I mean, can the country, can the economy stand on its own 2 feet and not need additional quantitative easing or, accommodative policy, shall we say, from the Fed. And they also, because of past accommodative policy, quantitative easing 1, 2, and 3, QE1, QE2, QE3, over a six-year period, they were purchasing treasuries in mortgage-backed securities in the open market aggressively, $80 billion per month. That's like $1 trillion a year. Well, now their balance sheet, all those treasuries and securities that they hold in value have gotten up to $4.5 trillion. That's something that they eventually at some point for just the economic and fiscal health of the economy have to start unwinding that. And it's when they unwind it and they start, they haven't been buying bonds lately. One of the things they can do, which has the least adverse impact, would be to simply let the bonds they own reach maturity and roll out and not roll them over and buy them, repurchase them, you know, as it rolls over, let them just come to maturity. But in this particular, or they could go out and actually start selling the bonds they're holding in the open market. Now, if they do that, just based on supply and demand fundamentals, the value of the bonds, the price on them, will go down. And when the price goes down, they will get the opposite effect of what they achieved with the quantitative easing program. If the bond prices, mortgage security prices, are dropping, then the underlying dividend yield, the yield itself, will go up. That means, unlike in the past, when money was getting cheaper and it was easier for people to refinance and to get money to buy a house or for corporations to engage in some of their own endeavors with very cost inexpensive money, just the opposite occurs. Things become a little more expensive. That trend would have a tendency to slow things down a little bit. That's the hope, that it would only be a little bit. My guess is, and it seems to be an indication, that the Fed chair is inclined to reverse this stimulus policy in a very careful, benign fashion so as not to slow the economy down and even run the risk of pushing us into recession. If, in fact, it happened too quickly and too large a volume, we would actually see some inflation, monetary inflation, develop in the system. Now, they want some inflation where, you know, they have a target of about 2%. But we're not seeing a lot of push towards that number. And some inflation would be good because that gives companies the ability to raise their prices for some of their services and their goods. And when they do that, then they can actually pass on higher payroll to their employees, and household income can go up in that environment. Inflation measures have remained, as I mentioned, very unimpressive. And that's what the Fed looks at closely when they have these meetings. Keeping investors kind of skeptical for an additional hike this year, although I think we'll get maybe one. The core personal consumption expenditures, PCE, it's a price index, the Fed's preferred inflation measure, increased about 1.4% in the 12 months through July. the metric has consistently missed the U.S. central bank's target, which I just mentioned is at 2% as a target, for the past 5 years. So it's vacillating in that 1.4 to 1.8 range. They'd like to see it at around 2 or maybe even just slightly higher. But looking ahead at next week, all eyes will be fixed on the PCE's latest reading from Brent Shuddy, who's the chief investment strategist at Northwest Mutual. Anything that gives us a hint of what inflation looks like or may look like in the near future, that's the big data point that he's looking for. Each and every central bank around the globe is talking about tapering or ending quantitative easing, reducing the amount of stimulus they're pushing into the system. See, all this stuff costs money. But ultimately, in the end, if they're able to get out from underneath quantitative easing and stimulus, then the economy will more honestly reflect what's really happening, whether it's truly growing, and then fiscal and monetary policy can be adjusted in a much more real, bright, and clear light. Now, the yield on a 10-year Treasury note fell slightly today to 2.25% after posting a strong rebound in recent weeks. Since lows around 2.02%, which was about 2 weeks ago, the yield on the 10-year has added more than 23 basis points, or 0.23%, over that period of time, which is a lot, notching further gains after the Fed announcement on Wednesday of this week. Now, Havens got a boost also following the exchange. The Japanese yen, when I say Havens, I mean safe havens, places where money goes when people are nervous. Japanese yen gained 0.4%, and the Swiss franc gained 0.2% against the U.S. dollar. Gold futures climbed more than 0.3%. Gold is one of the more efficient hedges against risk and inflation. Right now, there's very little inflation, but risk is still something that's being measured daily. The dollar index continued to shed some of its gains from earlier this week, and it's down about 0.3%. Folks, you're listening to the Money Talk program here on AM 790. It's your home of talk and business here in Southern New England, and I'm Don Sowa, filling in for Steve Bovee. I'm going to take a halftime break here, and we'll be right back.
This is Money Talk with Don Sowa, exclusively on AM 790 Talk and Business.
And we're back with the Money Talk program. On many of the shows that we mentioned, people have asked, you know, where do you get the ideas for your programs? What are the sources of questions that you address during the show? Now, we certainly have people call us up on the air, although we are on the what we call the high side of the drive time at 5 to 6 p.m., which means that a great many of our listeners are on the road somewhere, and we want to make sure that you can get home safely. But we do encourage and invite you to call us here on the air with your questions and thoughts about money at 437-5000 or 888-345-0790 if you're in someplace safe. You haven't left where you are or you've already arrived where you're going. That's perfectly fine. If you have a quick, brief question and you can get it in, our producer will take that question and plug it into my screen here so that you don't have to actually hang around there with the phone in your ear. But we also have a website at soafinancial.com, and you can click on the Money Talk icon, and it'll bring you right to the web page that relates to this program, and you'll find a place right on there where you can plug in your question. You can actually ask a question there. There are, of course, podcasts from past shows on different topics that you can look at, especially the ones that we find particularly interesting and the ones that have gotten a lot of attention from our listeners here. But we will use your questions as they come in as fodder and ideas for future shows. One of them was, what did we think of some of the prognostication and ideas of the one of the great gurus of money and finance, Warren Buffett? People have argued about his wisdom in whether his method or his investment strategies today in 2017 are still valid as they were in past decades. But I think it would be pretty hard to argue against anything that Buffett claims, what he espouses on investing in markets. He's a legendary investor, and he always has some sage advice and wisdom to pass along. He's not shy about that. He's a very popular guest on CNBC over the years. Now, recently, he said he thought that the Dow Industrial Average, the Dow Jones, would actually reach 1 million in value over the next 100 years. See, when I first saw the number, I said, okay, this is going to be interesting. Right now, the Dow is right in at about 22,000, which is pretty amazing as it is, because I can still remember not that long ago when it was less than 10 or quite a bit less than that. It seems kind of wild and outrageous when you look at numbers that are that big, but if you think about it on a compounded basis, it's not far-fetched at all. And actually, it may be too small. The only way they can avoid hitting a million in the next 100 years would be if they change the method by which the Dow stocks are priced. That prediction of a million on the Dow within 100 years assumes about a 4.7% annualized rate of return. In other words, you'd in your portfolio over 100 years, maybe you and your children and grandchildren, if you're managing the same portfolio over that time frame, if all you need to get is just under 5% return on your money, which I think is doable in a well-diversified, disciplined portfolio that you don't mess around with too much. Yet the industrials can probably do somewhat better than that, as I mentioned. So I don't think this is not one of those cases. When I first saw it, I said, oh, that could be a little outrageous. Wonder what premise is he using? And I said, well, he's using a million on the Dow over a 100-year period. Now, but what it tells you, though, it tells you something very, very important, that the single most important element of successful investing is time. I mean, Albert Einstein, the great physicist, once said that the eighth wonder of the world should be compounding interest or compounding growth over time. And this is a pretty good example of that. Whenever I hear people talk about, or talk really pessimist, you know, using pessimism about this country or about the markets in general, I think that they're probably out of their mind. They just really don't know what they're talking about. That's one of the common statements I've heard from Buffett. He said that just this past week in New York at a party, and they were celebrating the 100th anniversary of Forbes magazine. Now, he pointed out that the Dow was at 81 a century ago. I mean, we're at 22,000 now, and it was at 81 a century ago. It was first created in the late 1890s to represent a basket of 30 very large, important American companies. I mentioned on yesterday's show that it's not the 30 largest American companies, but it's 30 companies that, as a snapshot, were a solid representation of the U.S. broad economy. And back then, one of the most important and probably profitable, but critically important because of its services and its products, was a company that makes saddles, buggy whips, and bridles for horses. Now, why would that be so important? Because automobiles were not the primary mode of transportation. It was horses with wagons and coaches. And yeah, you were going to need bridles and buggy whips because there are a lot of buggies. There are a lot of most products were being shipped not even necessarily by rail, but, you know, by some sort of wagon being pulled by a horse. So that particular company was going to have a product that was in major, major demand. So, yes, it was representative of that key, unique period. Now, he also noted, since Forbes created his first list of the 400 richest Americans, that was back in 1982 when the Forbes 400 was created. Buffett, back in 1982, was worth about $250 million at that time. About 1,500 different people have been included on that list over time, all with one thing in common. You don't see anyone, according to Reuters, on the list of among the wealthiest people who were what we would refer to as short sellers. And we're not talking about how tall you are. Short seller is a person who borrows stock from a brokerage, stocks that they believe will go down. So let's say you borrow 1,000 shares of a company whose stock is trading at $100 right now, but you believe that that stock or that company's in trouble for some reason, or going to be. You think the price will go down. You borrow 1,000 shares worth $100,000, and what do? You immediately sell them in your portfolio. So what do you have now? You have $100,000 of cash in your money market account. Now, if you're right and the stock price goes down, then you go in and you cover your short position. Now, here's what that means. You go into the open market and you now buy shares. How many? 1,000. Why? Because that's the number you borrowed. You borrowed 1,000 shares. Now, by the way, you don't own the brokerage or the person that you borrowed the shares from. You don't own them $100,000. You owe them 1,000 shares of the stock. So you're buying them, let's say it dropped to $50 a share. You go into the open market with all of your cash and you buy 1,000 shares for how much? $50,000. And you return them to the brokerage. They place it back in the account. Now, you might have paid some interest on the 100 to buy it for the time period. But let's say, subtracting that to keep the math simple, what do you have left in the money market? You have $50,000 left in the money market. And that's how you make money selling short. Now, there's other strategies, there's other different ways to take a position, what we call a contrarian position in the stock market. But over 100 years, there are so many obstacles to overcome as investors. But his point here is to stay with the market itself, to actually be a believer in the future as they will rise over time. The wealthiest people in the country, the people who've been part of the Forbes 400 list over its century of publishing, are people who don't believe in betting against the market in general. Now, granted, there'll always be companies that are going to go down, but that's not the point. The point is to identify companies that you believe in, who are great, well-managed companies, stocks that are priced what you consider to be attractively or reasonably. This is what we call trading long or investing. You're a long trader, not a short trader. Long means you're going to buy low and sell high. Everybody says they believe in that, but not everybody does it. And as with all things, there are going to be things that get in your way. You have to have the discipline not to react or overreact. Now, not many of us reading this discussion, listening to this, will be around if this comes true in 100 years. Maybe a couple of you, who knows. But it's fun to discuss, to think about it. Now, if there's one person whom we could believe in, it would probably be Warren Buffett, because it's sage. It's not just knowledge. It's not just algorithms. It's not fancy crystal balling. In this particular case, it is wisdom. Let's take away from this his enthusiasm for investing in U.S. businesses, his enthusiasm for our great country, the finest and best country in the world. It always has been, at least as long as we know. Let's hope the generations that follow here heed the advice to invest and stay invested in good quality companies that are representative of the greatness of this nation and of its future. Are these markets, they're tremendous wealth creators. You can be a part of that if you stay the course and if you're disciplined. And I'm a great believer of that. I do still believe, after all this time, with all that I've learned, and after 26 years of doing this program, I still believe in buy low, good quality companies, and eventually, when it's appropriate, sell high. I'm Don Sowa. You're listening to the Money Talk program. We'll be right back, so please stick around.
This is Money Talk with Don Sowa, exclusively on AM 790 Talk and Business.
And we're back with the Money Talk program. This is Don Sowa. In the last segment of our programs, I oftentimes like to, again, go back to the mailbox from our website. People click on the Money Talk icon at the website, sowafinancial.com, and ask particular questions. And one of the ones that I did pull out of the barrel for questions this evening was related to the Trump, what they call the Trump trade. Now, as I've always said, I'm an investor, not a trader, but the Trump trade simply suggests that there are certain areas of the investment markets, certain stocks potentially, both potentially domestic and overseas, they all have to be considered, that benefit from the current administration of Donald Trump and the expectations that may come from the government because of the attitude of this president, and at least those attitudes that are consistent also with the U.S. Congress. There's a below-the-average deal out there, according to TheStreet.com, that expands a European construction company's U.S. footprint and that could signal a little bit of a return to Wall Street's hottest bet, which we just referred to as the Trump trade, because it's a deal and a company that may benefit from things that this current presidential administration are doing, or at least trying to do. Now, you have to believe that some of the things that are on the list, the wish list of this president and of this Congress, that at least some of the things, if not all of them, but some of them are going to get done at some level. I think that means you have to be a little bit more realistic and not shoot for the moon. I'd be perfectly happy that, to number one, that the rocket doesn't blow up on the launch pad. And ideally, if you could get into orbit, that would be really cool. But anyway, CRH PLC, symbol CRH, is a London-listed group based in Ireland. It was one of the UK stock market's top-performing names on Thursday of this past week after it agreed to actually spend $3.5 billion for Overland Park, Kansas-based Ash Grove Cement Incorporated. That's ASHG. Now, I'm talking about companies that are publicly traded, yes, that are indicative of a particular theme that we're discussing here on the Money Talk program. Please do not interpret this discussion as being a recommendation to anyone listening to get out and buy these particular stocks or these companies. I need to know a heck of a lot more about you than I do in order to determine what's an appropriate decision as part of your portfolio. But maybe you take the information we discuss and go to your financial advisor. Hopefully you're working with one who understands these things, but more importantly, one that understands you, and ask, is this something appropriate for me? You heard about it. And by the way, your advisor may say no, and just ask them to explain why, and they may be right. But anyway, CRH, which is North America's largest building materials company, it's also the second largest company of its type worldwide, it earned about half of its profits from the U.S. market last year. Now, this particular merger could suggest that investors and company bosses are positioning themselves for a return of that Trump trade, as we mentioned it, which investors use as a shorthand description for a sharp rise in what we refer to as old economy stocks focused on government infrastructure spending and broader commercial construction. Now, the Trump trade is also associated with small cap stocks in the U.S. that may see you may look as best placed to take advantage of major changes in the American corporate tax code that's currently a major part of fiscal discussions down on the Capitol. In fact, the Russell 2000, which is a benchmark of small cap stocks in the U.S., has risen nearly 7% over the past month, which is about double what we saw for the broader S&P 500 and Dow for the same period. Now, that's a really big change from the summer, when research from a number of different sources, different groups, issued research critical of the Trump trade, saying maybe it's over, or maybe it's a little bit oversold. Bespoke, one of the research groups, found that large-cap financials and industrials gained the most between Trump's November election and the January inauguration, but really got dumped the fastest as the president lurched from one self-made crisis to another during his first few months in office. So what's brought this seemingly dormant trade back to life? Well, Trump's recent overtures to the Democratic leadership on issues such as deferred action for childhood arrivals, the DACA bill, and a suspension of the federal debt ceiling. Those moves have many wondering if the president is actually laying out the groundwork for some bipartisan cooperation on some form of the really phenomenal tax plan that Trump touted earlier this year. In fact, a cynic would argue that Trump's recent vocal support for the Graham-Cassidy health care reform bill, which is certain to be rejected, or very likely could be rejected by the Senate if it ever comes to the floor, is merely a Machiavellian move on his part. Critics say that it will allow him to approach Democratic Senate Minority Leader Chuck Schumer and the House Minority Leader Nancy Pelosi, the president's new friends Chuck and Nancy, later this year and say, okay, you win on health care. Now give us something on tax and tax reform that will be good for everyone heading into the midterm elections. The president's newfound allies across the aisle might also help with another electoral ambition, a $1 trillion spending bill that would reshape the country's creaking infrastructure, roads, bridges, tunnels, you name it, dams, of course, and create hundreds of thousands of new potential jobs. The devastation brought by Hurricanes Harvey and Irma, of course, in even Maria, which by some estimates could cost around $500 billion in repairs, offer both the president and the country's most senior lawmakers a chance to appease two critical electoral states, both Texas and Florida, which simultaneously kick-starting a post-storm rebuilding process that will really need federal money regardless of who takes the credit for spending it. Furthermore, with the Federal Reserve poised to raise interest rates later this year, as we mentioned earlier in the tonight show, and maybe even grow, bring them up two or three times by the end of 2018, the president can plausibly argue that the cheap money window is closing fast. Whatever we do, we better do it now. Some writers, the financial writers, were looking last month, and they suggested that Trump's sure-footed response to Harvey, which he got some pretty good kudos for, his measured, somewhat measured reaction to North Korea's missile testing early on and stronger-than-expected U.S. economic growth, might have actually saved, at some level, elements of his fledgling presidency. Now, if that turns out to be true, and of course, we're still measuring this, it's still up in the air, it might have potentially revived this thing we call the Trump trade as well. So understanding what the Trump trade means, where you can take advantage of it. Yes, there'll be opportunities with certain individual companies. We mentioned CRH here as one of them. That said, we'll be looking for broader elements, maybe even some really good infrastructure-based exchange-traded funds or ETFs, which are baskets of stocks. Rather than trying to pick individual companies based upon management risk, you can pick a sector that could, in fact, benefit from some of the things that the Congress and the White House can get done if they handle some of these decision-making issues properly. Well, we're still measuring, we're waiting and seeing, and obviously we're watching politics, the economy, and the markets very closely here on the Money Talk program. Hey, everybody, I'm Don Sowa, sitting in for Steve Bovet tonight. I'll be back with you on Monday with more Money Talk. In the meantime, you folks have a terrific weekend, and welcome to the period we call fall. No more summer. Have a good night.